to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm your host, Elle Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobspodcast with an S.com. We're also on the streaming platforms, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms, please give us some stars, subscribe, show us some love, give us some feedback, because we are all about getting bumped up in the rankings so more and more people can find out about our little podcast, which incidentally has made the list of top career podcasts for 2019. Yep. Second year in a row. Very grateful, very proud. Again, could not have done it without all of you, with all of our amazing guests telling us about their music careers, how they got their music jobs, and just all of your incredible support. So thank you so much. We're really, really happy about that. And we just want to keep chugging into 2020 and beyond. So last episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Joshua Turner. He is the epitome of the working musician, the guy with the hustle. He talks about checking off all the boxes. He went to Berklee School of Music, Musicians Institute, went out to LA, you know, had the opportunity to be the rock star and decided to go back to Seattle and pursue his music career and support his family. So he's all about streams of income. He's all about the new music landscape, how you can monetize, how you can make money. So great episode, just full of good advice and tips. So I urge you to go back and listen to that if you haven't already. This week, I have the supreme pleasure of speaking with Suzanne Polinsky. She is the founder of the Rockstar Advocate. She is a music business coach, and her specialty is the intersection of strategy and also mental health, like a holistic, basically, approach to your music career. And she's going to talk all about it. But before we get to that, let's play one of my tracks. This is from last year's EP, Diatribe. Here's Lovin' You.
Thanks, Elle Ariel. Thanks so much for having me.
I am so thrilled to have you. So tell me about your first memories of music. Tell me what it was like to grow up in your household with music.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. So my dad basically only listened to the Beach Boys. So that was basically what I grew up listening to. That and Motown. My mom really loved Motown. So that's what I grew up listening to. And then I have an older brother, and he was really into, we grew up in Queens, New York, and he was very much into the Wu-Tang Clan and Tribe Called Quest and a lot of hip hop. So it was all different sorts of musical genres being played. My mom and I were also big Broadway musical fans. So there was lots of music being played. None of them are performers by any stretch of the imagination. And I kind of dabbled in performing a little bit, but never really liked an audience. So we were all kind of, you know, just music enthusiasts, really. And then as I got older, I think about 12 years old, Behind the Music started coming out on VH1. And that's when I really learned about, like, I remember Russell Simmons and Def Jam Behind the Music, and realizing, oh my gosh, there's a whole business behind it. You don't have to perform on stage to be a part of all of this. And that's really where I got my love for it.
I like that. So basically, there was a lot of music going on when you were growing up.
Yeah,
all different genres. That's very cool. Did you play an instrument?
No, my brother played drums for a little bit, and I attempted to follow in his footsteps, and I gave up on that. So I did a lot of singing. I did all the choirs, and I did the musicals in high school. And I love to sing, but like I said, I don't love an audience. So it was more just the appreciation for the craft. I love rehearsing. I love being around creative people. So by the time I hit college, I really just decided to, you know, be more of a helper behind the scenes.
What do you think it was that, I'm just curious, because I think you're an artist. It was just a different kind of expression of that. What do you think kind of cemented your love and passion of music and your decision to pursue it
beyond high school?
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. A lot of my friends from my hometown, we often talk about this. I mean, they all wrote in my yearbook, you know, you all have dreams, you know, in junior high that, you know, oh, I'm going to be the next, you know, Russell Simmons, or I'm going to own my record label. And they all kind of wrote in my yearbook, like, wow, you're really going to do it, because I was going to Drexel to study music business. And they were like, wow, you're like one of the only ones that really stuck to that goal. And we always joke, like, I don't know what it was. I just felt like, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up in a household where my mom from day one never thought that a dream was silly. Like, we never heard in my household, well, that's not practical. Don't, you know, that's not really a thing. So when I would come up with these ideas, like, I want to own my own record label one day, or I want to, you know, if I saw, you know, anything about Def Jam or anything like Arista Records, like on TV, I'd point and say, like, that's going to be me someday. And it was never discouraged. It was never like, okay, but what are you really going to do? My dad would say that once in a while. He'd be like, well, what are you going to do for money? Like, he was in Wall Street. So he was like, what are you actually going to do? But my mom was always like, no, she's going to do this for as long as she wants to. Like, that's, she's going to work hard and she'll make it happen. And so I never really thought about anything else.
And what was it about Def Jam hip hop versus, say, like, musical theater or mainstream pop? Or do you think it was the fact that you're in Queens, that you're in New York, you're kind of in the epicenter of all that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think it had a lot to do with my brother and just seeing his passion for hip hop and the culture. Just, you know, everybody that he idolized, everybody that he listened to, and I would, you know, just try to learn all the lyrics just to, like, impress him. And I just felt like, you know, looking back at Motown, like, that's kind of where I got my interest, learning how Motown and the Hitsville USA studio was run. Just the discipline of it all, to me, I felt like it was such a tight ship, and it was such a machine, and it was so, you know, so focused on the craft of it all, that I think that's kind of what inspired me. And I just am always more drawn to more soulful, lyrically driven music. And for me, that was hip hop and R&B. So I think that's really where it stemmed from.
Did you ever have like an interest in high school of like helping manage or producing bands, or was it just more focused on sort of researching how to get into the music biz?
Yeah, I think it was the latter. I had some friends that were in bands and I would go to their open mics and support them. But I had no, I don't think at that time until I got to Drexel, I didn't really understand like, oh, let me help you get that gig or let me promote you. I didn't really have that kind of mindset. To me, it was always like, oh, cool, guys, like I'll come to your show and support you. But once I get to college, I'm going to figure out how to own my own label. Like that was just the, like, that's all I knew to be the goal. So I didn't really have any interest at that point in time of like that grassroots stuff. But then once I got to college and my eyes were open to it, I started doing more of that in college and a little bit after college as well. But in high school, it was just like, well, you guys aren't like at a label. So what, if, like, what would I even do with you?
Maybe it was just a case of like, you had really good taste and you were like, sorry guys, you're never going to make it. So don't waste my time.
Yeah.
I got bigger fish.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love it. All right. So tell us, yeah, tell us about Drexel. Like, how did you decide on Drexel? Like what, tell us all about that.
It really, I have to say, it was kind of like something out of Harry Potter. I'm not kidding. Where like this flyer just ended up on my desk. My guidance counselor had never heard of Drexel. We didn't know what it was, but this flyer came in the mail and I'll never forget. It was this little 3x5 index card. And it just said, do you want to work in the music business? Do you want to understand like contracts and booking shows? And I was like, yes, 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 I do. When I went to go meet with them, we were going to be the first graduating class of their program. So it was a brand new program. Wow. I mean, they waived the admissions fee. They were like, you don't have to write an essay. And if my mom wasn't an English teacher, I would have gotten away with it. But she made me write one anyway. But it was just a brand new program at the time, and it was in Philly, and I had never really left home before, but I wanted to leave home, so it was still close enough where I wasn't too far away. So it just kind of checked all the boxes, and it was literally the only school that I actually applied to. I mean, my dad was really hell-bent on me going to NYU to study music, and so I specifically mailed the application a day late so that there was no chance of me even getting in.
No, that's funny.
And I graduated the year of September 11th. So a lot of my friends kind of stayed local because our town really got hit by September 11th. And so a lot of my friends decided to stay local and a lot of them went to NYU. And I was just kind of like, yeah, no, I need to get out of this city for a little bit. And so Philly was just a welcome change at the time. And like I said, as the first graduating class, we just really got to shape the curriculum. And so that was really exciting to me.
Were you doing internships at Drexel?
Yeah. What I also really liked about their program was that it was a requirement to have two 6-month co-ops in order to graduate. And my brother's best friend, she had just gotten a job at Atlantic Records. So she was just like, hey, why don't you intern with us? And I mean, again, you can't, you know, ask for anything better. So I worked for Atlantic Records for my sophomore and junior year. And one of my supervisors at Atlantic was moving to EMI. And he said, hey, you know, it's a shame you're going to be a senior next year. I'd love to take you with me to AstroWorks, which is under EMI. And that's where he was going. And I said, okay, Dare accepted. And I went back to Drexel and I talked to my counselors and we figured out a way for me to double up on my classes to get out a year early. And I started at AstroWorks when I was 20, like right after my very last final. I like took my last test on Friday and Monday I was at AstroWorks in my own office. And I was like completely overwhelmed and burnt out by day one. But it was, you know, just something I couldn't say no to.
Did you feel like Drexel prepared you for that? Do you feel like it gave you a good sort of hands-on or gave you all the tools and knowledge that you would need?
Absolutely. I'm so thankful for my education at Drexel. I mean, we had basically everyone was an adjunct professor, meaning, you know, everyone was really in the industry while they were teaching. So, I mean, we learned acoustics and tour managing from this guy, Ed Franco, who would tour with Bruce Springsteen. And we learned, you know, contract law and everything from this amazing entertainment attorney, Marcy Wagman, who has had decades in the music industry. And, you know, we just had amazing firsthand knowledge with our professors. And so I definitely knew a lot textbook wise. Like I knew the information. The only thing in hindsight that I felt unprepared for was understanding that it's okay for your dreams to change, because I quickly learned being at a label wasn't really what I was meant to do. I didn't love it as much as I thought I would. And maybe that's because I came in 2005 when I was in sales. So my accounts were Tower Records and Virgin Megastore and Sam Goody, and they were all closing. And so it was frustrating and we didn't know where to go from there. And they called me sorority girl, which was like, so bad. I wasn't even in a sorority, but I was the youngest there by many years. And they would say, sorority girl, we need to run Facebook ads, but you're the only one with Facebook, because only college kids had Facebook at that point. So I'd have to like run ads and like post things for their bands on my Facebook account. And we just didn't, like, nobody knew where to take this. Nobody knew what was happening. And so it was kind of depressing and kind of frustrating. Yeah, I kind of had a meltdown by 21 thinking, well, what do I do? From 12 years old, I wanted to be at a label. I'm here and it's not what I thought it would be. So I didn't think it was okay to change your dream like that. I was just in sheer panic at that point. And so I think the only thing that I would have preferred was maybe some guidance on like what happens when you need to shift gears a little bit. But, you know, that's what life is all about, teaching us lessons.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too. I mean, first of all, obviously the timing is crazy because you were right there sort of on the front lines as everything was kind of falling apart, so to speak, like, you know, with physical product going out the window and record stores closing. And I don't think anybody really had a clue at that point where things were headed. And the other thing I'm always interested to hear about the college experience, because it's so funny, like across the board, there's no for or against music school or music business school. It's really interesting. Like half my guests will be like, yes, absolutely, the most amazing education. I highly recommend it. The other half are like, no, didn't do
it. Don't waste your money.
Yeah, it didn't do a damn bit. It would have, you know, I learned everything like in my internships or just out in the world. Or so it's really interesting. It's really apples and oranges. And again, I think for you, you were on that perfect storm of like, you got all the knowledge you needed, and then you were thrown into an environment that was like changing by the day. So it was like, no wonder you were like, what the fuck?
And I think the interesting thing about that is, you know, I got lucky because at Drexel, at least when I went there, it was basically like a trade school. Hmm. Like it wasn't, I mean, I can't speak for going to NYU, but from what I'm, you know, what I know of it, I mean, it's such an institution, and it was, you know, it's very academic. And not, I mean, listen, Drexel is very academic too, but it was more based on real world experience, getting out there. At one point I had 3 jobs while I was in school, only 1 paid. And some of them were working for the professors. One of them, who's now the dean there, Jim Klein, he did all the source music for ABC. So I'll need to license music a lot. So I would go on MySpace and I would scour MySpace for new bands and up and coming singer-songwriters. And then I would contact them if they met, you know, certain requirements. And I'd say, hey, we're interested in licensing your music and possibly use it in a show at some point. And, you know, really all my years there were so hands-on that I think that's really what did it. And it was a network of professionals that enabled me to kind of get into the industry faster. And I think that's really what we paid for in tuition, you know, not so much sitting in the classroom and like opening up a book. I mean, I don't think I ever bought a textbook while I was there. None of our professors required them.
Wow.
It was just more, you know, roundtable discussions and hands-on learning. So I think I just got lucky with that particular format.
Yeah, absolutely. And considering the timing, it's like any sort of formal education would have been almost like obsolete probably by the time you graduated, considering how quickly things were changing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was a sophomore when iTunes finally like first launched, and we would talk about that in class, like, what does this mean? Like, you had Napster, but now, you know, iTunes is making you pay for music. Where will this go? I mean, it was just such a cool time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I always think, you know, between like the 80s introduction of the mixtape and then iTunes and the iPod, like those are two really big sort of seminal moments in music and consumption of music, because it changed everything, you know?
100%.
Yeah. So what did you do?
So I had a breakdown. Uh-huh. I started going to therapy, which was a godsend. I mean, I truly felt like it saved my life. And I really just started figuring things out. My college roommate at the time and I, you know, we had both graduated early, and we both had this dream of being the next Russell Simmons, Rick Rubin duo. We were like, let's do this. Our senior thesis to get out early, we paired up and we wrote a business plan for a record label, and we got an A+ on it. So we figured, okay, great. We're great academically, and we just assume that would translate into the business world. What we didn't understand, and what I understand now after many years, is understanding certain business practices in terms of how to onboard new clients and, you know, how to structure your prices a little bit more effectively, and, you know, what services to offer. I mean, we were just like, our service list was about 8 pages long, and we would work with anybody that would give us a chance. We did sign a band that they called their music Hiptronic Electro Hop. So it was a DJ, a drummer, and an MC. And they were very, very talented musicians from Philly. And we had all the contracts, and we're like, again, you know, coming from an academic background, if you have the contract signed, you're set. Mm-hmm. But a contract is only as good as the people who agree to it. And when one of them wanted to renege on the contract, you either spend thousands of dollars fighting them in court or the contract's broken. So we lost a lot of equipment and money and resources when he finally jumped ship. And so it was a very tough lesson to learn. We, you know, we had our hand at trying to run our first hip hop label. We realized that that's not what we're built for. So then we turned our company into a consulting company, and we would write bios and EPKs and social media plans when social media was just, you know, coming up. And we did that for a while, but we didn't fully understand, again, how to price our services and how to handle multiple clients at once. And eventually it just, you know, we were both working full-time jobs, and it was like, okay, we don't have a clear idea of where we're taking this. So we amicably split ways, and I took some time off. I went back to school. I got my master's in psychology. I thought, you know what? Screw the music industry. I'll be a social worker, because that's got to be easier. And then I did some internships for about a year with adolescent at-risk teens, which I thought is something I'd always be passionate doing. And I wasn't made for it. I mean, it broke me. It was just so heartbreaking. And then the music industry wasn't looking so bad. I was just like, okay, I've learned a lot. I'm a trained counselor. I have a background now in mental health, and, you know, I saw a void there in the music industry. This is about 2012. I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And then, unfortunately, my dad got very sick. And so I had to take a year to, you know, focus solely on family, which, you know, I would do in a heartbeat. And then after he passed in 2013, again, my mom just was like, you know, you've got something here. You can't slow down. You got to pick yourself up and you got to start this. So I sold my car and I put some startup money into a business. I hired a business coach who was not in the music industry to really guide me and give me those systems that I was missing, the client system and the financial management system and all of that stuff. And within 4 months I had a business. So it was kind of a whirlwind, but by 2014, I was, you know, getting ready to do the Rockstar Advocate full time. And it was a great feeling.
That's awesome. Let's just back up a little bit, because I want to talk a little bit about this partnership you had in the music business and trying to navigate that. Again, I think I have to say, like, totally admirable, amazing effort, all things considered, because again, I think things were still kind of blowing up and falling out from going from the traditional record label and everything else to this sort of like independent, uncharted landscape. So trying to manage artists through that and trying to navigate that, I can only imagine would be incredibly like difficult, and not to mention stressful, because again, you don't know what's going to happen, you know, in the next year.
Right. Right. Well, and thank you very much for saying that. Yeah. It was definitely, looking back, it was like, wow, we had balls.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. And I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that, because I think this idea of failure is something that people still aren't able to embrace, because it's, you know, there's so many negative, and I wouldn't even use the word failure in your case, but this idea of when something doesn't work out,
sure,
it's somehow a personal reflection on your ineptitude or you,
right.
And I think that that's total bullshit. I think it's, there's so many parameters and there's so many moving parts that you can be the best manager in the world. You could be the best businessman, entrepreneur in the world, and you're still going to go bankrupt. Things are still going to fall apart. People are still going to break contracts. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little, not to mention you're dealing with artists.
Right.
So I'm wondering if you can just talk about that with our listeners, and so that they can kind of understand, like, this is all part of the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so, so important. And something I wish, you know, if I could have learned anything sooner, it would be to be okay with failure. You know, I can't really speak on her behalf, but I do know, I mean, we are still very good friends, and I, you know, we were very open and honest with each other throughout the process. And I think the biggest thing looking back was you had two straight A students who, you know, school came very easy to us. I mean, she graduated valedictorian. I was up there. I wasn't, you know, the top, but I was definitely up there. I got mainly straight A's, and we took our work very seriously. And I think when we graduated, you know, we just thought, well, I mean, we know it. We have the information. Why would we fail? Like, this is, we can do this with our eyes closed. Like that, we kind of went into it very brazenly, like, this will be a piece of cake. We wrote our business plan. We just, act it out now. And that's it. I don't think what we fully realized was, number one, again, we knew contract law like the back of our hand, but when you can't make an artist do something just because it says it on the page, you know, I mean, we'd have countless meetings with them. I mean, we laminated their contracts. We were like, no, like, this is what it says. And they were like, I know that's not what we're going to do. And I mean, we were dumbfounded. We were like, what do you mean? That's what it says, though. Like, we were just so naive to the fact that you can't just write something down and make it true. You have to deal with different personalities. You have to deal with teams. You have to collaborate and compromise. And, you know, we didn't really get that. We were just like, well, you know, we're funding you guys and we're the boss and this is what it is. So we were very confused by that. The other thing was too, I mean, we were two, I mean, we're also like, just based on stature alone, we were both two very tiny white girls, and we were entering the hip hop world. And so we also knew not only were we tiny, but we were very young and we looked even younger. And so a lot of times we'd get mistaken for high school interns, and, you know, we'd meet people at their studio to have a meeting with them. And, you know, early on, we made an agreement, you know, blazers, you know, full on suits. Every time we go for a meeting, they could be wearing whatever they're going to wear, but we have to be, you know, briefcase, like super, super professional. And we'd still get the whole, I mean, we sat down at one meeting with some older guys in the industry, and they were just like, yeah, no, I like what you had to say. So like, when do we talk to your boss? And we were like, we just spent an hour talk, like, this is our company. We were so dumbfounded, and they were like, oh, you're the ones we emailed with. And we were like, yeah, yes. Like, what do you have? What is confusing? So we knew from the outside, just the optics alone were kind of like against us. And really what that led to, because we didn't have the right mindset about it, is that we had perfection paralysis. I mean, we would write a blog post and we'd both reread it like 50 times. You know, we'd both, if she wrote it, I'd change things. Or if I wrote it, she'd be changing things. And it was like, we can't mess this up. Like, we have something to prove in this industry, specifically in the genre. And so we can't afford to be wrong. We can't afford mistakes. We can't afford to look silly. So everything was just triple, quadruple checked. And we didn't get anything out there. You know, we'd spend a year on stuff and working our butts off, but the, you know, public wouldn't see anything. So that was another big hurdle, you know, being, again, a straight A student, like, you know, perfection. And we didn't just get like, done is better than perfect. Like, that's something I fully embrace now. But in our early 20s, we were like, no, let's redo our website like 5 more times. So that was definitely a big thing for us to learn. But what I am really proud of is that when we started, we had a very blunt conversation and we said, listen, like, this might get ugly one day. I mean, you might, you know, have a view of how things should go, and I might have a view of how things should go. And, you know, we're both very independent people coming together to collaborate. And so we vowed to put friendship first. We vowed that we'd always do right by the business, but if the friendship was going to be, you know, vulnerable, we'd rethink it. And luckily, it never got to that point, but it did get to a point where we both had very different visions for what we wanted to do. So it was a very amicable split. The friendship came first, and we said, okay, like, I wanted to move forward with it. And she's much more artistic. And so she wanted to focus on her music. And I support that. I still support it to this day. So, you know, she went off and did her thing, and she's always supported me. And I went on to continue the company, and then I closed it down, and then I started my own company. And I think, as I said, the biggest lesson for us was just just learning that it's better to just go out and do it and be messy. Like, I'm so messy these days and I fully embrace it because I'm getting more done. And I think when you start out so academic, it's hard to transition into the real world where it's like, hey, you can't just read it in a textbook and that's how it will be.
Right. Well, and the thing is too, and I think that it speaks to the fact that you haven't really brought it up. You don't perceive yourself as a victim. However, right. I think the fact that like this is two young women in a very male dominated industry, uh-huh. and the fact that you felt it's like the Ginger Rogers. Is it uh-huh. Ginger Rogers, that quote where she's like, I have to do it all, but dancing backwards and in heels. Like, you have to do it twice as, you have to be, like, I understand where the pressure came from.
Right.
It was like you were constantly having to, like, justify, defend, explain, prove yourself.
Right.
And every single time, and I interviewed a really talented young woman in the UK who's a producer, and every time she goes into the studio, it's like she has to bring a fucking speech with her, or like, you know, and be like, yes, I'm your producer. Yes, I know I look young. Yes, I know I'm a woman. Yes, I know what these knobs are for. Like, you know what I mean? Like and she's like, she's won these awards, and she's like, I think now that I've gotten this award or that award, they'll finally, it's back to square one. And again, we're not victims. You certainly are not portraying yourself as a victim, but it is a fact of life that this is a very male dominated. It just traditionally, that's the way it is. That's been. And so, yes, there is this, all these things that you have to consider. It's like me as an artist, if I'm going to go meet a male producer I've never met before, and he wants me to show up at a studio at 11 o'clock at night, I might bring my boyfriend with me. You know what I mean? It's shit that, like, if you were a dude, you'd never give a second thought to. But as a woman, you have to constantly kind of, like, check yourself and constantly kind of do things, check things over, do things, you know, more than once. Or, again, that pressure to, like, succeed and perform, because you know it's like everybody's going to be scrutinizing you, everybody's going to have their eye on you.
100%. And you know, I agree with you. I don't think we ever saw ourselves as victims. I think we tried very hard to be honest about the optics. You know, it was just like, we know we look young. Like at 22, if you put a sweatshirt on us, we look 13. You know, like we knew how it looked when we walked into a room. And we also knew, you know, there was no room for us to play victim. I mean, we were like, you know, just take white privilege, for example. Like we knew it wasn't, oh, poor us, poor little white girls trying to make it in hip hop. We just wanted to be taken seriously. Like we wanted the hip hop community to know that we valued them and that we wanted to honor them and not try to like, just, you know, have some gentrification thing, you know, like we weren't looking for a free ride. We weren't, you know, we just wanted to be taken seriously. And so we just wanted to try very hard to always say the right thing and do the right thing and work with the right people. And, you know, sometimes it backfired on us, but yeah, I have to say, I agree. I am very proud of the way we handled it and how we approached it. And, you know, you do the best you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure it made, you know, you developed a really thick skin and you can walk into any room with your head held high. It's like, I'm sure that, what is it? Rough seas make good sailors. Like you,
exactly.
You got your chops.
Yep.
So let's talk about your business now, because it really is an interesting pivot. How did you come up with that? I mean, I know you obviously went into counseling and all that work that you did, but what sort of put the two together?
Yeah, it was a really interesting turn of events. So a couple of things took place. I mean, number one, like I said, when I was like 21 and I went into therapy for the first time, I mean, that really was game changing for me, and being open about mental health and learning that, you know, I always took it as like, well, I'm really smart and I'm really in tune with myself, so that's all I need. But, you know, really understanding how to be in tune with yourself, but then how to navigate the outside world around you is a whole other situation. And so just learning those skills, I realized all my years working with artists, you know, how many of them self-medicate and, you know, have depression and anxiety. And, you know, it's, this is rock and roll. Like, you don't talk about that stuff. And, you know, this is what makes great music. And everyone's proud, if, you know, to be a part of the 27 Club. And, you know, Amy Winehouse had just passed around that time. And it was like, you know, let's revel in her talent, and rather than mourn the unbelievable loss that just happened. And there was just a lot of backwards perspective on it that I was finding. And so that was number one. When I got out of my master's program, I realized I just saw everything in a different light. And number two, being born and raised in New York and having a father who worked on Wall Street, my mom worked very hard too. It was just this workaholic type mentality. And it was like, if you work super hard and you bust your butt and you put work first, there'll be a payoff. And, you know, when I did that and I got out of school early and I took 8 classes at a time and, you know, I did all the, I had 3 jobs while I was doing it. And then I get to my job and I hate it and I'm miserable. It was like, well, something's not adding up. Like this isn't right. And so many people told me to take time off between college and my first job, and I didn't listen. And so many people told me to take a break after I left that job, and I didn't listen. So many people told me to, you know, go. My 20s, my friends will talk about the vacations they all went on together and, you know, the relationships they all had. And I'm like, I have no recollection of my 20s. Like, I just worked. That's all that I did. And, you know, I realized the cost, you know, that it was causing me. And so when my dad passed and I was 28, 3 months later, I got Lyme disease. And not just Lyme, but like 3 bullseyes. So I got 3 tick bites all carrying
the Lyme disease. That's wow.
My first time camping. And I went with 20 people and I was the only one who got bit. So if that's not the universe telling me, hey, slow the fuck down because you're not getting it. Like, you're working in a broken system. I really took that as like, oh, okay, I need to like not work this hard because I'm not working productively. And so when I hired my business coach not too far after that, you know, I would cry to her and I'd say, I'm sick. I can't do this. I'm sick. I'll never get this done. And she really taught me the value of working smarter, not harder. And it was the hardest thing to trust. Like, you're not going to tell a New Yorker, slow down and you'll get more done. Like, it just wasn't hitting home. And so that was once I really realized in 4 months and half that time, I couldn't get out of bed sometimes. And I was making more progress in 4 months than years with my other business. I was like, okay, there's something to this. And then the other thing was I had an artist by the name of Karina Karina. She's a very good friend of mine. And at that point, I was writing, she was our last client with my business partner. And we had written her social media plan. And after that, you know, she'd call me up and I'd have other clients call me. You know, I was the girl at 2 in the morning, you could email or call and say, I just broke up with my boyfriend, or I'm on tour and I'm super depressed, or I got back from tour and my landlord evicted me. What am I going to do? And I was giving therapy to all of these artists. And finally I said to her, yeah, I don't know. I might leave the music industry. And she said, no, we need you. And I said, well, what have I done for you? Like, what's been the most helpful? And she said, like, you helped me get through post-tour depression, which is like a real thing. And I said, well, is this like a service you'd pay for? And, you know, we talked about it and she'd help, like, you know, give me really great feedback on like what would be valuable to her as support and what she felt she was lacking. And she really was the inspiration for me to start to create. You know, I learned I can't really market therapy, both ethically and also just musicians weren't interested in paying for quote unquote therapy. But if you kind of packaged it around time management, okay, like, yeah, I know I need to manage my time better. And then it's like, yeah, why aren't you managing your time? Well, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, I'm going through a lot. Okay, let's talk about that. Like, it's, you know, so she really helped me kind of shape, you know, the services that I could offer and the value that I could give artists. So that in a nutshell is really where this all came from.
I love that you've been on the cusp of, how do I describe this? Like, you know, your entry into the music business, right when things were like totally falling apart. And then this foray into like mental health and time management and dealing with artists. Like I it's like, you're so prescient. Yeah. Like I'm kind of astonished at how your timing is just impeccable, because I feel like, especially as artists, we're all stuck in this episode of Black Mirror, right?
Yeah.
When it comes to social media, because now we're constantly dealing with a barrage of, I just performed here. I just made this video. I'm at South by Southwest. Where are you? And it's this constant, like, chipping away at your esteem as an artist, in your confidence. I mean, I personally had to, like, basically go on a fast because I was like, a social media fast, because I was like, this is fucking with my head. This is bad. Like, this is really fucking with my head, and it's causing that paralysis that you were talking about. So I'm kind of astonished, because I feel like you're just tapping into, each time you've been tapping into sort of, what's the word, like, the zeitgeist of what is really happening. So talk to me about that. Like, talk about kind of the landscape today, because I think, as much as it's like, yay, independent artists, you can be whoever you want to be, it's also like this kind of dystopia, right? Like,
right.
You're never going to make it. You're competing now with millions and, you know, nobody gives a fuck what you're doing. So.
Oh my God. I couldn't.
Yeah, so talk
more.
About that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could say that I had some sort of magic touch with all this. I mean, really, I have to bow down to Arianna Huffington and what she's done, not only for women, but just for business across all landscapes. I mean, she's really the one that I'm just like in complete awe of and so thankful for, because in 2014 and really the beginning of 2015 is when I started to, you know, branch out and try to reach out to conferences and try to get speaking engagements. And I have to shout out Lou Playa, who started Reverb Nation. He was at Atlantic running Lava when I was an intern. And during my off hours, I would go help him out. And so 12 years, you know, fast forward 12 years, I had started this new company, and a mutual friend put us back in touch with one another. And he was like, yeah, come to this conference with me. Like, I'll put you on the panel. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. You know, he just believed in me so early on and was so supportive. But even with his support and with the stamp of approval from Reverb Nation, which has like the largest membership of artists, of any company, he still would have trouble convincing them to put me on panels, not only because, I mean, I still had at least 10 years of experience under my belt, but the topic, they were like, nobody cares about self-care. Nobody wants to talk about mental health. Like, that's not a thing. And then finally, like, I think it was in 2016, Arianna Huffington's book, The Sleep Revolution, came out. And so many, I mean, the financial companies and the tech companies and all these other industries were like, oh, okay, yeah, we need to value sleep more. This whole burnout kind of thing isn't working. We have to value family time more. You know, working smarter, not harder, like really trusting all that, which I had learned in 2014, I could now point to that and say, no, this matters because she matters and this is going somewhere and the music industry hasn't caught up. So just give me a platform and let me spread this message. And other people started to come up along the way too, you know, talking about that, talking about the musicpreneur mindset, talking about the fact that you have to now be an entrepreneur. You have to have the mindset of an entrepreneur to make it in this business, because you can't just say, oh, I'll just go get a record deal. Like, that's not how it works anymore. The record deal wants a finished product. They're not going to develop you. So, you know, you have to be the business person, and so many musicians fight that. So, you know, there is a lot of weeding out, as you said. You know, it's either you're going to crash and burn, or you stick with it and you make it happen. But unfortunately for a lot of musicians, you know, it's always going to be about creating great music, but that's not where it stops. You know, it has to be empowering yourself to make decisions, being okay being wrong, understanding that things are going to take a lot longer than you think they're going to take, and then getting the right team of people behind you. There's a lot of all this, that's all new. You know, that's not what we think of when we think of musicians and we're like, that's what I'm going to be. So there's still this catch up that has to happen. But my job is so much easier now and my clients come so much faster now, thanks to people like Arianna Huffington, Thrive, you know, Honeybook and Rising Tide and all of these, you know, big blogs and lifestyle influencers that are like, yeah, let's talk about mental health. Let's talk about, you know, seeing ourselves as entrepreneurs. It certainly makes my job easier.
Yeah, such great points. And you're obviously very knowledgeable about it. And I think that, again, there is this sense of that you can never, it's like you were saying the New Yorker thing about slowing down. Like there is this sense, especially on social media, because it is 24/7, 365 and a global audience. There is this sort of inherent pressure that you don't sleep, you don't stop, you have to keep posting, you have to keep promoting, you have to keep, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think it feels like this endless treadmill that, again, like you're saying, takes a lot longer than people expect, because again, we're you know, everything is a myth, right? Where you're presented like this person just blew up overnight. You're not going to hear that it took them 6 years to be discovered, quote unquote, overnight.
Right.
You know,
right.
So you're still being fed that myth. And then on top of it, yeah, it's like somebody is going to have more fans, more followers, more nicer outfits, you know, whatever it is. So what do you say to that? Like, how do artists kind of get off that treadmill or out of that, like, deprivation, it's never enough mentality?
Yeah, it's so funny that you asked that. I actually just released a podcast episode on basically this topic, which is about the fact that how do we stop self-sabotaging? And the thing of it is, you know, from my own experience, but also just the research I've done on it, I read this great article in Psychology Today that mentioned, you know, a lot of this comparison and the fraud talk, which is something I talk a lot about on my podcast. Like a lot of that, you know, oh, like you had just said, I'm not good enough or I'm not going to get there. This person already has that spot, so I'm shit out of luck. And, you know, all of that talk that we all find ourselves doing, you know, who the fuck am I? Like, you know, all that stuff. A lot of it stems from cognitive dissonance, which basically means if you don't have the self-confidence, and a lot of us don't starting out in this business, if you don't have the confidence, if you're constantly thinking to yourself, I'm not good enough, I don't deserve this, I'm a screw up, no matter how many achievements you get, no matter how many awards you win, or people tell you how wonderful you are, that then doesn't vibe, it doesn't align with what you believe, so then you avoid it. And so it's really not about the fear of failure, it's about the fear of success. Because failure, we know what that feels like. We've all been there. We get it. But with a certain success, it's usually about something you've never experienced before. It's usually surrounding something that you haven't lived yet, because you're shooting for that, right? So if you don't know that, our animal instinct is like, oh, that's unfamiliar. And oh, it's not aligning with my belief in myself because I think I'm a failure, so I'm going to just avoid it. So we start cleaning our refrigerator and, you know, binging something on Netflix and doing everything else but the things that are going to get us achieving that goal. Spending an hour on Instagram being like, yeah, they're doing it. Yeah, they're awesome. Why am I not awesome? Well, because you're spending an hour looking at other people instead of just working on your own stuff. And we all do that. But I think the core of it is to start with the mindset to do something every day. Like I love gratitude lists. I love surrounding myself with people who think positively, who, you know, want to see me succeed and I want to see them succeed. And doing that, because if my mindset is strong, then the dissonance will go away and then that fraud talk goes away. So it really starts down at the root there.
That's excellent. Well, we're running out of time, but I want to just hear about the kind of services that you offer. So can you talk a little bit about that? Like what types of services that you can offer to artists, musicians? Is it all types of artists or mainly musicians, or what's your client base?
Yeah. So I say in general, it's music professionals. I mean, some of my clients have been comedians and writers, but mainly in the music industry, I've worked with managers, booking agents. I've talked at labels. I've worked with bands. So really anybody that is a creative person who's looking to really either build a career. I kind of have three tiers. You're either looking to start to build a career and find where your audience is, or you kind of, you know your audience, but you want more consistency, or you've got all that consistency and you've got your team, but you're so inundated. It's like, well, where do I start to automate and what are my systems? So basically what I offer is I've got group consulting for some of the newbies or people that really just need monthly and weekly accountability. So I have a subscription service called Rockstar Slackers, where we meet on Slack, and every week I check in on your goals, and every month we have a video chat to answer any questions. And it's a join anytime, cancel anytime subscription. And then I've got my clarity sessions, which are 90-minute sessions to just sit down and say, here, you know, they're basically therapy sessions, but they're also mixed with strategy. So it's like, here's where I'm blocked, you know, here's what's not working, but like, what are my next steps? What can I do now? Where am I moving from here? And then my higher tier is, you know, working with people, like I said, who have a team, and we sit down for a one-day intensive and we build out your systems. We automate, you know, your client onboarding or your newsletter system or your social media management or whatever it might be, and really build everything out so that it's all working in sync with one another. So I mainly work with anybody who just needs to get better organized in their business area of their music career.
That's fascinating. So it's not just in terms of support and coaching and, you know, mental health, but there's this whole like very nuts and bolts strategizing. Are you working like with social media consultants or
yeah, I can.
Digital marketing consultants? Or?
Yeah, it all depends. You know, sometimes the person just wants to work one-on-one, and so I'll give them tools that they can give their social media manager, or I'll meet with them and their team and I'll say to them, hey, social media manager, like you should be meeting with them X amount of times per week or month, and here's how I would, you know, create the system so that you guys can communicate clearly, and here's the brand, so you both are on the same page about what the goals are, and just making sure that people are, you know, I it's basically a form of marriage counseling, you know, making sure that you're working together and supporting one another in the right way.
That's fantastic. And then you also have a podcast.
Yeah, the Musicpreneur Mindset Podcast. Thanks for letting me share. It's, again, just mindset. It's getting into that perspective of I'm not, quote unquote, just a musician. This is my career. I'm an entrepreneur, and that's how I'm going to approach building my career.
And then how do people find you?
Yeah.
Like social media, website?
Yeah. So the website is therockstaradvocate.com. And then on all socials, I'm Rockstar Advo.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Suz. What a great talk. I think you've inspired a lot of people.
Thank you so much for this opportunity and this platform. I'm just really great to have a conversation with another awesome badass boss lady.
My special thanks to Suz for a great interview. So grateful for her taking the time to speak with us. And I don't know about you, but I get super excited and motivated after hearing her share. I have a feeling you guys feel the same way. So again, go check out her website, therockstaradvocate.com. She's got all these amazing services, and she also has products to share. She's got the Rockstar Planner, which is all about helping you stay on top of your goals and work on your Rockstar plans. So she's actually kindly offered all of y'all, the Hey How'd You Get That Music Job listeners, a discount code. It's FF30 for 30% off. So definitely take advantage of that. I know I will. Okay, my loves, this ends another week of Hey How'd You Get That Music Job. I am your hostess with the mostest, L. Ariel. Hey guys, I have a show coming up Sunday the 28th. If you are on the west side of SoCal, so in Santa Monica, it's at Trip Santa Monica. I would love to see you Sunday night the 28th at 8 p.m. You can check out my website at lariel.com for more information, and social media is at lariel music. The Hey How'd You Get That Music Job is also on the social media at Music Jobs Podcast, so stop on by and say hi. Okay, my loves, take good care, have a wonderful week, and remember, y'all gonna keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.